I'll be back next week with more investigations and analysis on Palestine Declassified. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
In the limelight. The latest studies show that half of the people living in the United Kingdom are worried about the sudden increase in the cost of living on a daily basis and cannot afford their living expenses. The unprecedented jump in the inflation rate and the unbridled increase in the cost of living has put the spotlight on Britain's economy. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. British newsletter The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to new statistics, an ever-increasing number of households in Britain, including teachers, pensioners and employees of the National Health Service, are turning to food banks for assistance as a result of the cost of living issue and the rising rate of inflation. The research conducted by the Independent Food Aid Network found that almost 90% of food banks surveyed reported increased demand in December of 2022 and January of 2023 compared to a year earlier. According to the new study, about half of the 85 organisations running 154 food banks in the United Kingdom which responded to the survey admitted that if demand increased further, they would either have to cut support or turn households away. The Trussell Trust, which with more than 1,300 food banks is the UK's biggest provider, expects this winter will have been its busiest ever, warning back in November that food banks were at breaking point. Between April and September alone, it distributed 1.3 million emergency food parcels, a third more than the same period in 2021, and over 50% more than pre-pandemic levels. The Independent Food Aid Network coordinator Sabine Goodwin, commenting on the study's results, said, "It's very clear that people have been trying to muddle through the winter on credit and are now building up debts that will push people over the edge." Sabine Goodwin accused the government of unsustainable and unethical reliance on charitable food aid, warning that without a change of approach, there will be nowhere for people to turn to. Food inflation is at 16.7% and the cost of gas is nearly 130% higher than a year ago in the United Kingdom. The Office for Budget Responsibility, the OBR, forecast in November that households' disposable income would fall by 4.3% in 2022-2023, the largest drop since comparable records began in 1956. The Independent Food Aid Network research found that food banks are struggling to meet record demand from people who are in work, including NHS staff and teachers. More than 80% reported supporting a significant number of people for the first time, while many said demand was growing among pensioners and families with newborn babies. Cost of living increase were given as the biggest problem, followed by inadequate wages and waiting times for initial universal credit payments. Benefit restrictions and deductions were cited by one-third of independent food banks as a motivating factor. Notably, the workers who are going out on strike make up a large portion of those who have turned to food banks, as the most extensive public sector strikes in decades have been brought on by a real earnings decline and rising inflation rate.
The raging cost of living crisis in Britain began in 2021, when prices for many basic items rose faster than household incomes, causing real incomes to plummet. Apart from soaring inflation, the COVID-19 pandemic and Western sanctions imposed on Russia over a conflict in Ukraine are among the major factors driving the crisis. Reuters news agency has also covered the story and tells us more. A leading business company has revealed that more than 70% of British households fear they will be severely hit by the cost of living crisis in the first part of 2023, up from 54% at the end of last year. Survey data from market researcher Nielsen IQ showed recently that rising inflation rate and deteriorating economic situation have weighed more pressure on Britons during the first months of 2023, disappointing the majority of households about the country's economic future. Market researcher Nielsen IQ reported that UK grocery sales on a value basis rose by 7.6% in the first 4 weeks of 2023, due to an increase in food price inflation to 13.8%. However, volume sales fell by 6.9%, reflecting the unprecedented deepening of the cost of living crisis. Mike Watkins, Nielsen IQ's head of retail and business insights, said, "We expect a challenging first quarter for the grocery industry, with inflation very much top of mind for shoppers." He added, "As a result, shoppers will continue to trade down to cheaper brands or private label products." The damning report came on the heels of another survey, which revealed that one in five British adults turned to eating food past its use-by date or consuming smaller portions this winter. According to published figures by the Office for National Statistics, 18% of British adults either used out-of-date food due to the rising cost of groceries. The rates were even higher among those with depression, diabetes, or dependent children. After a tough 2022, British consumers have been grappling with an even tighter squeeze on their finances this year, with the inflation rate running at 10.5% and a looming recession. The skyrocketing prices caused by surging inflation have prompted many labour forces across the country to stage strikes and protests to air their concerns about economic challenges in the face of an intensified cost of living crisis. The Wales Online website has also covered this story. A leading youth charity has revealed nearly half of the young population of Britain fear they will never earn enough money to support a family as the cost of living crisis deepens across Britain. Releasing its 2023 Youth Index recently, the Prince's Trust, a youth charity that has carried out a survey among 16 to 25-year-olds, during a 14-year period, revealed that 45% of these youngsters in the United Kingdom have no hope of establishing a new family due to the soaring cost of commodities and services. The Prince's Trust said the age group's happiness and confidence is at its lowest level since it started the research in 2008, and they are most unhappy about their money and mental health. The report revealed that 57% of young people said the cost of living crisis is the biggest worry for their future, while 34% said the coming recession is their greatest concern. About 46% said they felt hopeless about the future because of economic uncertainty. The data, which is from an online YouGov opinion poll of more than 2,000 young people in Britain showed that 39% of the age group 16 to 25 from less affluent backgrounds agreed that thinking about money depresses or stresses them. The Prince's Trust UK chief executive Jonathan Townsend said, having already lived through one of the most turbulent times to be young, this year's Prince's Trust NatWest Youth Index is a warning sign that post-pandemic young people's well-being has not recovered. Most concerningly, the report also suggests that these challenges are hitting young people from the most disadvantaged backgrounds the hardest, with those who received free school meals or who are unemployed reporting consistently worse well-being in all aspects of their lives. According to the Prince's Trust report, around 64% of respondents said their biggest goal in life is achieving financial security. The study also revealed that around 70% believe that having a job that gives them financial stability is good for their mental health, while 59% say being employed at all was good for their mental well-being.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You are listening to Islamic Upbringing. I'm your host, Zainab. And today, in our studio, we have with us our special guest, Professor Salman Nakavi. Assalamu alaikum, Professor.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Dear listeners, Professor Nakavi is a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University and a research scholar over here in the Hawza Almi of Qom. And we have been discussing a series of, we went through a series of episodes with Professor Nakavi where we discussed the levels of Tarbiyah and most important topics of Tarbiyah Islamic upbringing with him. And today we are continuing some important topic with him. Professor, we had a very interesting question. Where a three-year-old was making some mistake and a mother was concerned about the future of the child, she was wondering if the child could repeat the mistake and not accept his mistakes in future. Well, we do have so many people around today who are even adults. They don't accept their mistakes, even if they are wrong at some place where they should accept their mistakes. What do you think? What does go wrong in the upbringing that leads to this thing, that they do not accept their mistakes as they grow up?
Number one, they should be, when they observe their parents, they don't learn this from their parents. As I said, if we were, as parents, if we were giving them a good example of accepting each other's mistakes, even if we've not made a mistake, and as I mentioned before, if my wife feels offended, and it's not because of any wrong things that I've done, she feels offended by some action or my behavior, but it's not a wrong behavior, even then, if I accept that, okay, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, let's forget it, then that is a way of showing my children that you can accept mistakes even if you have not committed them. I mean, just to appease a person whom you love, or you can accept your mistakes even if they are not apparently your mistakes. So that's one thing, that we don't find good examples in our lives, especially from our parents, from our elderly people. All the time we're seeing each other blaming each other. This is one situation. Another situation is that maybe as a child, especially our mothers were always defensive and trying to justify what we've done. So that
exactly. That's what most mothers do.
So one thing is that the mother scolds you tells you off in front of others, that's something not good, especially for something which is very, very not a big mistake at all. And secondly, mothers start justifying the mistakes that we have made. For example,
so there are two factors basically behind the fact. Okay.
So that sometimes you find mothers scolding, instead of telling them the child to take care of the door which is in front of him or her when he's going to the other room, instead of taking care and hitting the door.
Now if he strucks the door.
Instead of opening it properly, the door slams upon him and he's hurt about that by that. So the mother would start hitting the door, that the door was wrong in doing so, whereas the child carried out the mistake. Now, again, you're not supposed to scold him, or you're not supposed to tell him that it was not a good thing you did. You should have opened the door properly, for example. So we need to teach them what the right thing is.
Yeah.
That is important. But how we do it is very important. And certainly it's not good to always, reprimand them and to tell them off that, oh, you're making mistakes. No, tell them what the right thing is to do. Tell them what the right thing, what is the right thing to do and how it should be done properly. Show them, look, this is how you should open a door, instead of, bashing into it.
Kicking the door and bashing the door itself.
Yes.
All right. So it's actually, if your child is hurt by a door, for example, you don't have to bash the door. You have to actually teach your child how to take care when he's going in and out of the room rather than bashing the door, because this way he's not going to accept mistakes. Here he thinks door was wrong, and in future he thinks others were wrong. Well, we're going to discuss more after a short break, so stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm Zainab. I'm with Professor Nakavi, and we were talking about the adults who don't accept their mistakes as they grow up, or the teens as they are in the late teens and they don't accept their mistakes. Where does upbringing go wrong? Professor Nakavi, the first thing you said is that mothers, either they have scolded a lot, or parents, both the parents, the father, the mother, or both of them have scolded the child so much for a mistake that he's not going to accept it any time in the future. Or the second thing, whenever your child was doing wrong, rather than teaching him, you were actually bashing this and that, even the non-living things, like we gave the example of a door. Well, that was about this question. Now we have another question. This is a lady who is 67 years old, and she wonders about her granddaughters who take less care of her job, or who are actually more concerned about their clothes and their outlooks. Because she says, what I have learned throughout my age is that if time goes back and I had to rectify something, is not to spend so much money on how we look like, because others don't give a damn. But my granddaughters are actually doing the same thing, and even modesty is getting diminished day by day. So how do we help them?
So actually, you can't go back in time and change your behavior. So that's the issue. Basically, that is the reason why all this is happening. That the example they have seen all their lives was their mothers giving so much attention to their makeup and to their apparent features and their clothes and their how they dress up, how they make up, how they even show off their ornaments and jewelry and all that. So it becomes a vicious cycle. Some sort of all the time we're looking as what others feel, how others feel about us, and how others should be. We want to show off in front of them. So our children would certainly learn the same thing. Now, of course, there comes a certain age in adolescence, especially girls. They want to. And boys, even, they want to show off what they are.
They're more concerned about what others think of me.
Yes, and their own features are important. They really get
obsessed
with their own features. And they feel they give excessive time about to how they look, and how others would look up to them. So this is a situation which has to be tackled in a very sensitive manner. This form of expression of one's inner energy should be given other channels. I mean, the expression should not be just with one's own features or one's own expressions or clothing or apparently how we look. It can be transferred and channelized into other positive, constructive activities where we allow our children to express their innovation and their creativity,
yeah,
and how they can, change things for the better, take care of others. So
right.
This is what they should be learning at school. They should be learning at home. For example, I may have mentioned this. There's a school principal that I know of. When I went to his home, there was a motorcycle, a bicycle, a smaller child was opening, tearing it down and building it up, or the motorcycle, or whatever, different gadgets. They were there in the house, in the garage, where the children were free to do whatever they liked.
They're
so
constructing things.
They were constructing and
using that ability, basically.
So
yeah.
this feeling of being able to express oneself, can we channelize into constructive things?
We'll discuss more after a short break, dear listeners. Stay tuned with us.
The Prophet ﷺ said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Professor Naghavi. Professor Naghavi, you were saying that constructive ideas should be put into, actually, we should be working upon the constructive part of our children before it becomes destructive.
One of the basic senses, or one of the dimensions of human nature is aesthetics, beauty. Everyone is concerned with this. It's something which is intrinsic in our human nature. As we like knowledge, we are obsessed with knowledge. We want to acquire knowledge. In the same way, we like things which are beautiful.
Yeah.
So we are looking for beauty everywhere. So the sense of aesthetics is there in all human beings. And this sense has to be somehow coordinated with the sense of beauty which we have in the creations of Allah Almighty. This feeling of this obsession with beauty somehow should be synchronized with the beauty of the creation of the universe.
Yeah.
And to be able to replicate that in our lives. So example, just give me an example. When one paints something, makes a painting, or makes, for example, a drawing of something which is natural.
All right.
So there's a connection here being created between the natural beauty which is out there,
yeah,
and the beauty which is within us, to be able to create that thing which replicates that natural beauty.
All right. That's so beautiful.
So this is how we can somehow make our children interact with nature, the true beauty of the nature, which is a manifestation of God's power and will. So that is important, how we channelize that feeling of, you know, expressing yourself and showing yourself off. It can be made to be manifested in different activities which are pastimes or hobbies, which should become a part of our daily lives. And so today, unfortunately, taking care of these
materialistic apparent futures.
I mean, if you're not giving them this opportunity, then they're going to be engaged with
the same passion somewhere else. Because if we contemplate about Surah Adiyat, Allah Subhanahu wa Taala says that in the contemplation of the surah, that He has kept some passion within us, but He wants us to use that passion to move towards Him. But we are moving, actually running, like the fast running horses who are running in their races towards the dunya, towards the other things. And then He says, "Innal insana li rabbihi lakanud." Indeed, the humankind is so ungrateful towards their God, because the passion that was supposed to take us towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is actually taking us away, far away from Him, because we have used the same passion against Him, not towards Him. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. Thank you so much to our listeners. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Food for thought.
Salam, dear listeners, and on the threshold of the blessed month of Sha'ban, how about reflecting upon a maxim bequeathed to us for our guidance by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Beware of the flight of blessings, for nothing that runs away is returned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en. South Korea, the name conjures up a thriving economy from which many popular brands come. The East Asian country is usually referred to as a success story of a close cooperation with the United States, in contrast with North Korea. The country's booming economy in recent decades, however, has emboldened the authorities to lecture the world, just like their American masters. Their throwaway and sometimes hostile remarks have contributed to the growing tensions in the world. In a rather recent case in mid-January, the president of South Korea described Iran as the enemy of the United Arab Emirates and called Tehran its biggest threat and compared it to North Korea, which he declared as Seoul's biggest threat. Regardless of Yoon Suk-yeol's groundless accusations against the Islamic Republic, the question is if South Korea is as good and innocent as it tries to peddle, with no skeletons in the closet. An innocent country that the long arm of fate has put next to North Korea, their biggest threat, to borrow a phrase from Yoel. Perhaps one of the notorious cases of atrocities committed by South Korea dates back to February 12, 1968. When the country's marine unit launched a raid on Phong Nhi and Phong Nhat, two villages in central Vietnam. The ruthless raid left scores of bodies, all unarmed civilians. John M. Capanelli, a U.S. Marine investigator of the time, wrote in the declassified documents on February 18, 1968, the victims of this innocent were defenseless civilians, the great majority of which were women and children, who were murdered as they pled for their lives. He added, in an attempt to placate the survivors and relatives of the dead and wounded, the executive officer of the South Korean Marine Battalion offered his apologies and provided 30 bags of rice to the district chief. In 2021, nearly a half century after the Vietnam War ended, victims of the massacre at Phong Nhi and Phong Nhat decided to seek compensation from the Seoul government. In the words of Nguyen T. Thong, a survivor of the Phong Nhi and Phong Nhat massacre, "I have never been free from the nightmare of the day when South Korean troops came to our village. But the South Korean government has never once visited our village and never once asked us what happened." We'll be right back. Phungni and Phungnat massacres were followed by the Hamai massacre, where South Korean troops killed over 100 villagers on February 25, 1968. Again, mostly women, children, and the elderly. South Korea maintains it has found no evidence of civilian killings in its wartime records. That's while, by many credible accounts, South Korean forces claimed an estimated 9,000 innocent lives in total in over 45 incidents of massacre spotted throughout Vietnam. Widespread accounts of sexual assaults also exist, with some studies estimating that up to 10,000 Vietnamese women and girls were raped by South Korean soldiers. Dictator Park Chung-hee sought to build a stable South Korean government, and so he agreed to take a leading role in the Vietnam War in exchange for American military support in the Korean Peninsula and economic support for his ambitious development plans. The estimated $1 billion U.S. dollars worth of American aid and other war-related income was a vital lifeline for the crumbling Korean economy. But Vietnam is not the only country the South Koreans left their bloody mark on. In January 2000, The Guardian ran a frontline page headline, U.S. and South Korea accused of war atrocities, for an inquiry that had uncovered the secret of a series of attacks carried out by South Korea on North Korea. According to the research, South Korean troops attacked the North a year before the Korean War broke out. More than 250 guerrillas from the South reportedly launched an attack on North Korean villages along the East Coast in June 1949. It was only one of numerous small-scale conflicts instigated by the South. In the early days of the Korean War, Seoul also carried out wholesale executions of its own citizens. A slaughter believed to have killed 100,000 or more leftists and supposed sympathizers, usually without charge or trial, in a few weeks in mid-1950. In 2019, the New York Times opened up with another long-suppressed case on Jeju, an island off the southern coast of South Korea. In 1947, a group of Jeju Islanders rose up against police brutality and called for a unified Korean government after the country had been divided into the North and the South. The police, however, responded with an extermination campaign, branding the insurgents as communist agitators. Jeju became a human slaughterhouse, with an estimated 30,000 people losing their lives, about one-tenth of the island's population. In fact, not only has Seoul been a threat to the neighboring countries over the past decades, it showed the least possible respect for its own people's lives. The atrocities committed at Brothers Home, a state-funded facility for vagrants where thousands were enslaved and abused from the 1960s to the 80s, is a case in point. In August 2022, South Korea's Truth and Reconciliation Commission found the country's past military governments responsible for the atrocities. From the 1960s to the 80s, South Korean military dictators ordered roundups to beautify the streets. Consequently, thousands, including homeless and disabled people, as well as children, were snatched off the streets and brought to facilities where they were detained and forced to work. Many inmates were enslaved, raped, and in hundreds of cases, beaten to death or left to die. So far, no one has been held accountable for hundreds of deaths, rapes, and beatings at Brothers. At the same time, while some South Korean presidents have made apologetic statements about the country's participation in the Vietnam War, they have fallen short of acknowledging the massacres, years after trying to deny or hide them. Ironically, they have instead been busy branding this or that country as good or bad. Isn't it time for Seoul to acknowledge its own atrocities committed within and without the country?
Today's special. Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, Salaamu Alaikum, and welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. The topic of this episode is the art of saying no. That was an interesting topic, and I invite you to listen to this till the end.
I never thought about all the things you have given to me. I never thanked you once. I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you. Until I took the first step, and that's when you opened the doors for me.
Today, Tuesday, is the 30th of Rajab, 1444, of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 2nd of Isfand, 1401, of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and 21st of February, 2023, of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, we choose some verses of the Holy Quran for listening and learning about it. For today, chapter Al-An'am, verse 56.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. قُلْ إِنِّي نُهِيتُ أَنْ أَعْبُدَ الَّذِينَ تَدْعُونَ مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ قُلْ لَا أَتَّبِعُ أَهْوَاءَكُمْ قَدْ ضَلَلْتُ إِذًا وَمَا أَنَا مِنَ الْمُهْتَدِينَ
Say, indeed, I have been forbidden to worship those you invoke besides Allah. Say, I will not follow your desires, for I would then have gone astray, and I would not be of the rightly guided.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The undue desires from anybody they are issued should be explicitly responded with a negative answer. The sources of the Prophet's determinations are divine revelation. Acquaintance from infidelity is a part of Islam. Polytheistic belief is the root of sensual desires. Thus, preacher of the faith ought not to follow to quench the people's desires, but he should act for the sake and pleasure of Allah the Almighty.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? Doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light. You guides me through my darkest nights. Shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need, anyone. Anything in life, but you know I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
During some episodes of today's special, we look at the art of saying no. Now we continue. Learning to say no is a very powerful tool. Saying no to certain engagements, people, and choices which take away from your goals to succeed is very important. Think of no as a friend protecting you from wasting time and energy. Be firm, not defensive or overly apologetic and polite. This gives the signal that you are sympathetic, but will not easily change your mind, if pressured. If you decide to tell the people you'll get back to them, be matter of fact and not too promising. If you lead people to believe you'll likely say yes later, they'll be more disappointed with a later no. The delicate balance is learning to say no in a non-offensive, polite manner, while keeping the reins of your good akhlaq in your hand and not degrading or hurting anyone.
Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. This is Ali, and we are going to talk about the art of saying no. If you are a leader, people will not be offended by your rejecting their opinion. If an overall climate of trust and sincerity is present in the team, also the trust of the subordinate in their leader depends on the general akhlaq and moralities and leadership of the leader with them. The unbiased and impartial behavior of a leader makes this easier. Wise people, wise ones, have said that out of amrun bil ma'roof wa nahya anil munkar, enjoining good and forbidding the evil, it is the latter that is tougher because it involves negating the other person's opinion. So very beautifully we can say that learning to say no is a very powerful tool, saying no to certain engagements, people, and choices, which take away from your goals to succeed, is very important. Think of no as a friend protecting you from wasting time and energy. Be firm, not defensive or overly apologetic and polite. This gives the signal that you are sympathetic, but will not easily change your mind if pressured. If you decide to tell the person you'll get back to them, be matter of fact and not too promising. If you lead people to believe you'll likely say yes later, they will be more disappointed with a later no. The delicate balance is learning to say no in a non-offensive, polite manner, while keeping the reins of your good akhlaq and moralities in your hand and not degrading or hurting anyone. IRIB English Radio. Recitation as well as translation of Quran.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ.
And we certainly gave Moses the scripture that perhaps they would be guided.
Short commentary of the Quran. Islamic issues.
The institution of the family in Islam is the most beloved by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
The life of the infallible. All in all, in today's special, IRIB English Radio.
We're speaking about saying no. Get back to focus on yourself. When you're asked to do something for someone else, instead of providing an answer on the spot, it's often better to tell the person you'll give their request some thought and get back to them than to impulsively make a promise and fail to deliver. This will allow you time for consideration and checking your commitments and priorities. Also, this isn't an excuse to say no to those we are obligated to serve, such as your parents in their time of need. If you are going to say no to your family, friends, and colleagues, always give them a reason why you have to refuse, depending on the situation. It helps others respect your decision and understand where you're coming from. This is crucial to maintaining and having a strong relationship.
Everything I have, everything I own, everything I eat is thanks to you. Every breath I take, every bird I hear, every smile I see is thanks to you.
In this part of today's special from IRIB English Radio, I introduce one way to say no without feeling guilty. There was this, putting the question back on the person asking. This is highly effective in a work situation. Let's say a supervisor is asking you to take on several tasks more than you can handle. You might say, I'm happy to do X, Y, and Z. However, I would need 3 weeks rather than 2 to do a good job. How would you like me to prioritize them? Be firm. This is another way. If someone can't accept your no, then you know the person is probably not a true friend or doesn't respect you. Stand firm and don't feel compelled to give in just because that person is uncomfortable. That's an easy way. So be firm and say goodbye.
So what kind of courage do you have? Is yours sort of floating between depending on the situation? Or do you know the difference between right and wrong for your life? And you've made up your mind. I am not going to be disobedient to God, no matter what the challenge may be. Or you are a floater. That's what I call them. They float. They float left today, right tomorrow. It depends on whether the sun is shining or whether there's clouds, whether the offer is good or attractive, or whether it's not. And floating means I don't have the courage to stand where I ought to stand. We know about Joseph, and we know that he was sold by his brothers into bondage, and Potiphar bought him off the block as a slave, put him in his household, and Joseph did such a fantastic job that finally he just turned everything he had over to Joseph and let him run his household. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, lie with me. And so he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, how then could I do this great evil and sin against God? He didn't just say, well, how could I lie with you? He said, how could I do this great evil? That is, Joseph was wise enough to identify exactly what he thought going to bed with her was about. It was about what? Sinning against God.
The topic of this episode of today's special was the art of saying no. Inshallah, we continue to speak and learn more and more about this interesting topic. Till then, Allah bless all of you. Have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami, Lafata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami. علي إمامي علي إمامي
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.